Welcome to the GameDev.tv Community Podcast. I'm your host, KB, and I would like to introduce you to industry professionals and people who successfully made their path to the video game industry. I hope that you enjoy the podcast and get useful tips that will bring you closer to achieving your dreams. Now, let's get right into the podcast.
Thanks to you guys for joining us today. We're talking about all things mobile, mobile development, mobile questions, and also about the new mobile course that Nathan's been working on for quite some time. And we will, of course, take any questions that you guys have. If you can please type your questions over in the Q&A live channel, which is over on the left-hand side of Discord, just two spots above where we are in the voice channel. As Wolfie has shown us over in that channel, please add QSTN prior to your question so we can see it and find it. Today I'm joined today with Nathan. Nathan has been working on the Unity mobile course for quite some time, and you may know him from the Unity multiplayer course and from other places around the interwebs as Dapper Dino. So Nathan, welcome today.
Hello everyone, thanks Rick.
Fantastic. We're also joined by Tim Ruswick, who you guys will know from many places around the internet, and you've probably seen him chattering about the Game Jam recently and a million other things. So Tim, also lovely to have you here today. Welcome.
Hello world.
Tim is the John Wick of game dev, according to Gore. Thank you for that insightful observation. Yeah.
I'm not sure what that means.
If you get in his way, he will shoot you in the face. That's what it means. That's John Wick, right? He shooty gun.
Okay,
down.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So feel free to ask any questions as of now. Gary is saying Nathan's volume's a bit too low. We've already had that conversation. We've told Nathan that we'll make him angry so that he speaks with force.
I'll try and make sure I speak very loud when I'm actually talking, but I can't really seem to do any other settings to adust it without really just blowing it out and making it crackle and stuff. So
maybe if Tim and I speak a little bit more quietly, then people can turn their microphones up and just we'll try not to get excited.
I can speak quietly. Yeah, I can speak very quietly.
Don't do that whisper thing. I've seen some of those whisper Twitch people. It creeps me out. I can't stand it. Just like, now I'm rubbing my microphone. It's anyway, ASMR. ASMR, is that it?
ASMR course Sionis? Incoming?
Sorry, say that again.
ASMR course.
Oh yeah, are you volunteering for that, Nathan? It wouldn't be very long, would it? Step one, whisper. Done.
You know, I've never talked to Nathan before, but I like him very much. I think this is going to be a fun hour.
Oh, have you guys not connected? Oh, look at this. This is
I don't think we have.
It's like a dating show. Nathan, meet Tim. Tim, meet Nathan. You guys both like game development and walks along the beach at sunset. So
that is what we've matched on, yeah.
Okay, so Wolfie has kicked us off with a question. Let's try to be a little bit professional, and I know I set the tone for our lack of professionalism most of the time. What's your view on microtransactions in mobile games? So, Tim, do you have a first opinion on that? What's your view? Microtransactions, mobile games.
They're killing game dev.
Oh, that's provocative.
Not really. Maybe a little bit. I'm a little bummed out when I go to the App Store and I'm looking for a game to play, and they're filled with them. But at the same time, like, it is a very exciting opportunity. It's a new way to monetize games, and I think art generally follows monetization business models. So it's fun. I think they can be abused, but then again, if you really look at it, everything could be abused. So I don't think they're harmful in themselves. I think the way that people use them sometimes is harmful.
Mm. How about you, Nathan? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I feel like what's considered acceptable does vary based on where you are in the world and whether it's mobile or PC, for example. Because I think the huge majority of people are against PC game microtransactions when they are actually affecting gameplay and they are, you know, pay to win. But on mobile, it seems to go, you know, accepted for the most part. I think, based on the platform and where you are in the world, it does differ, you know, what's considered acceptable.
Mm. I think in general, if players see that the microtransactions add to their experience, they're excited by them. They're happy to participate in them. I play Rocket League and, you know, played Rocket League for years, gazillions of hours. And I think I've given Rocket League, I bought it originally, but In addition to microtransaction stuff, I've given it maybe $20, you know, and that's not much money for a long amount of time, but that's for me, that's okay, because at some point I was so invested in it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to buy this thing because there's a meaning to it, some sort of season pass or something that gave me a heightened experience. Similar with League of Legends, when I played that, you know, I'd buy small things every now and again up to what I felt the game was worth for my investment. So sometimes you can flip the scales. If you have a pay up front, you're asking someone to have faith in the fact that they're going to get value for money. But if you do it the other way around with the microtransaction approach, then you can give people something for free or for a small amount of money. And then you can say, when you feel that we've earned your money, give us your money. And I think that holds true. For me, I'm more of a PC player than a mobile player, but I think that holds true whatever platform you're on.
It's cool because it's given rise to kind of this games as a service thing, right? Like, it's not just mobile games, but now we're seeing games that, like, they're built for years. They're not just built and then launched. They're built for years. And mobile games do that, some of them, but PC games are starting to do it now too.
Okay, cool. There was a question I was skimming through before. There's a question from, let's see. The question is, what do you guys think of procedural generation from Underdog? And I'll kick off on that one, because when back in ye olden days, when people were starting to get into indie development, or I guess when I was starting to get into indie development, making a story-based game was valid. Making a game that went from A to B was valid. And there was a lot of good vibes around that. And procedural generation, there were some games out there, but it was new-ish. And then what happened was the YouTuber revolution, where if you wanted to have your game have success out there in the world from a marketing point of view, you needed to have replayability and you needed to have variation so that YouTuber A could play the game and have a different experience to YouTuber B, and they'd have something to get excited about and yell about and to be able to play and not ruin the whole storyline. And that's where procedural generation has really taken off, to make sure that there's variety in the experience for people, not just the player, but also for these people from a marketing YouTube point of view. So there's been a massive shift towards games that aren't the same each time you play through and have replayability. And from that point of view, I really like procedural generation. It creates marketing opportunities for your game if you're an indie game developer, and variation for your players.
For sure. If you look at linear story games, right? Like, that part of the problem is exactly what you said, that two YouTubers are going to have the exact same experience, but the player is also going to have that experience. So if you're watching somebody play a linear story game, the game has been spoiled for you, right? Whereas, like, if you're watching somebody play a procedural generated game, you can look at it and say, oh, I would do that differently. I would go here. I would try this. And then you can play the game kind of for yourself.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it has replayability, or, like, rewatchability with, you know, different people playing it. But as well as that, also just over the years, it will still be fresh. Like Minecraft right now, you know, it's still going on. Every time you boot up a new world, it's special. It's unique.
Yes. So, question from FaZeBN. How does mobile game resolution aspect ratio work? So that's a good one for us to just take a moment to tell you guys about the Unity mobile course that Nathan has been working on, that's just launching, and we're going to throw a code for you guys to get an early coupon down in the bottom of the chat. Nathan, I know in the early part of the course you talk about aspect ratio and game resolution and spend a lot of time showing people this is how you make the game not be a mess if you're playing on one device versus another device. Is there anything else you can add to that in terms of what you teach in the course, or just how to approach the conversation of aspect ratio?
Yeah, when it comes to just, you know, making sure the right stuff is on the screen presented in a correct way, you know, it's still something you deal with regardless of what device you're deploying on, whether it's PC, mobile, or whatever. But you tend to find with mobile, the resolutions and shapes of the screens vary a lot more. You know, because you'll have like a phone and a tablet, and you'll have a square and a rectangle, or like a very, you know, long rectangle. And you've got to, you know, first of all, when designing the user interface, take that into account. But I'd say Unity is pretty good at, you know, giving you the tooling with the UI system to make it dynamically scale good enough so that you can just make it on your phone. And for the most part, it should look good on other devices if you set up the anchors correctly. And we do go through that. And then as for the actual game itself, like the game world, it can depend on what you're making, because if your game is, let's say, following your character around, then, well, wherever your character goes, they're going to be on screen. But if your game is, let's say, something more like Angry Birds, where you're looking at the world that's still, you want to make sure that the stuff on the left and the right of the screen stays there, so that if you go onto a smaller device, they don't just appear off the screen and you can't play the game because you can't interact with it. So we do make sure as well, using Cinemachine, one of the Unity packages to do with camera work, that it makes sure when you rescale the camera or when you, you know, change onto a different device, that those things stay in focus of the camera so they don't go off the side of the screen. And you shouldn't have any problems with that kind of stuff happening then.
Yeah. You know, the first time I saw watched the video where you were creating adding the simulator within Unity, I looked at it and thought, wow, that's really cool. You can just, you've got your little picture of an iPad, and then you switch a setting and you got a little picture of your Samsung phone, and you got the game is within the simulation. You can see it right there on your screen. For me, that was that's really cool. It's not just saying, hey, have a guess at it, or we'll just change the size of your regular play window. It's actually got a little picture of the device there, so you can see it and know exactly how it's going to look and feel. So hoorah to Unity for being cool with that.
Yeah, that's a really cool feature. I've made so many mobile games and I had to use fixed resolution because of my inexperience and my tool set. And years later, when they were 16:9 originally, vertical, or 9:16, I guess. And on some of these 21:9 phones and some of these crazy different aspect ratios now, they just look horrible. They look really outdated. And it sucks. So it's cool to have tools like that, and especially like technology that adapts to.
Yeah, so I'm seeing a bunch of comments in the chat about Unity versus Unreal, not which engine should we do, which is a great topic as well, but another Unity course that we're creating, and what about Unreal Engine? So let's talk about that just for a moment. What we've been doing is painfully and annoyingly waiting for Unreal Engine 5, because if we go and create content in Unreal Engine 4, then it's going to be out of date shortly, because Unreal Engine 5 has a bunch of user interface changes. So we've been waiting, you know, it's been painful for us to wait because we've been wanting to dive in there and update our courses and create new courses. Now that Unreal Engine 5 is in alpha and is starting to get on its way to being stable, we are starting to create content for that. So we're going to start off by looking specifically at Blueprint, making a short little Blueprint course. And as always, no promises on this, no promises that we'll launch it or what the dates will be, just in case. You know, I'm always hesitant to over super promise to you guys, because I want to be able to keep our promises. So this is a goal as opposed to a promise, but we are absolutely getting into that. And as soon as Unreal Engine 5 is stable, then we plan to have content as soon after that as possible, and then we'll open the floodgates for new Unreal content. So thanks to everyone who is an Unreal person and waiting around patiently. We are absolutely going to be getting more content for you guys soon, in the very near future. Cool. Do you guys see any other questions in there you want to grab and take on?
I think like the second question that was sent was about the launch of the course, like when it actually is on the various platforms, I guess, if you haven't mentioned that, or are you saving that for later? Is that
No, that's a good one for now. So the coupon code link that we put, that Tim put in the chat just before, that's live right now. The course is available on Game Dev TV site, so you can go grab that right now. And the question of when's it available on Udemy, it will likely be available in the next couple of days on Udemy, if you guys want to be doing it just as a Udemy course. As always, it helps us if you can purchase courses on GameDevC website. We try to keep things around the same price for people who are purchasing, but obviously we get a little bit more of the spoils of war if you are purchasing it on the GameDev TV website. So that's why we like for people to hang out on there. So, good stuff. Thank you for that question. How about you, Tim? Have you spotted any Q's and A's that you like the look of?
Duck07747 asks, Are there any courses available to go over main menu UI creations? So I would add to that, I would say, how much of this Unity mobile course covers like mobile UI and stuff?
We haven't got like any specific sections on UI. I mean, the course is split up into sections for, you know, the multiple different little games and projects. Each one having like, I'd say quite basic UI, because for the actual UI itself, it's not necessarily mobile specific. We've basically given each section its own focus to do with mobile stuff. So the first one is about input with, you know, touch input and the resolution and making sure everything looks good using the mobile simulator. And then the next section is about, what do we do in section two? I've like forgotten which order I did things in.
Driving. So we have
the driving one.
A simple driving game.
Yeah, we build a driving game and then we end off by implementing push notifications, because that's, yeah, again, something that Unity offers that's not too hard to get working. And it's pretty cool as well to have little notifications on your game. And then we have like an asteroid avoider kind of game where we end that off after making all the gameplay with the ads, so that you get the option when you crash that you can watch an ad, and if you watch it through to the end, then obviously you can continue playing and the developer gets a bit of money. And this is using Unity's own ads, so it's all Unity. We're not relying on any third party systems for this.
So we're making mobile games from scratch with monetization and push notifications and publishing to the app stores?
We show in the final section most of the process for publishing, but it's not that easy to show like an entire publication, especially with the fact that we're not literally publishing our own game ourselves. But we show most of the behind the scenes and the kind of stuff where like you have to buy a developer license to see most of this stuff when you're doing it yourself. And some people might be, you know, they might not want to commit to buy a developer license until they know what the process is like. So we show most of that off for both Google Play Store and Apple App Store.
Which is a really interesting point. I think some people don't know that if you want to publish to those places, to the Play Store and the App Store, then you do have to buy a developer license. You have to pay a little bit of money in order to be able to publish. And that's just part of the process. But hopefully the amount of money you have to pay to publish, you'll make back in some shape or form from your game being amazing. Maybe not your first one, but maybe your seventh game. How long do the licenses last for, Nathan, on each of those platforms? Are they annual or are they forever once you buy a publisher license? Do you know that?
Yeah, so for Google Play Store, if I remember when I got mine, it was about £20 or £30, I think, and it's forever. At least I'm aware it's forever. I haven't had to pay anything since that time I got it a few years ago. And then for the Apple App Store, it's a bit more pricey and it's a yearly subscription. But obviously it's for as many games as you want, right? You don't pay this fee for every game you release. This is just to get your license. And then you can release, I guess, theoretically as many as you want. There's probably some ridiculously high upper limit, maybe. But yeah, you won't worry about hitting that.
And the cool thing is that you can pop your game out on either of those platforms pretty easily through Unity. From a Unity point of view, it's, you know, just, and Nathan shows you this in the course, here's how to create your game for the Play Store, create your game for the App Store. There's a little bit of trickiness if you don't have a Mac to work on, an Apple computer to work on, but there are ways to work around it. And you talk about that in the course, right, Nathan? How to deploy for the Apple App Store, even if you're a Windows PC developer.
Well, at the end of the day, you do need access to a Mac to publish the App Store. You don't necessarily need to own one. In the past, I've rented like an online Mac and used that. Though for this course, we got access to a Mac itself. But I developed it all on Windows and then showed, as someone who's developed on Windows, but wants to deploy it to the App Store, how you would take that and then send it across to a Mac and make sure the files are all, you know, working. And there is a little bit of a workaround you've got to do, but it's not that much effort. It's like writing one line of code to just fix one of the files when you've transferred it across. But yeah, when dealing anything Apple, anything App Store, it is a bit more effort, but you know.
Yeah,
you just have to deal with that. Yeah, a lot of effort.
I hate it on iOS. I think Mac and Cloud was the service I used to publish iOS.
That's what I used to.
Yeah, it worked great. But actually, what I ended up doing, because it was such a pain in the ass to publish, I went on Fiverr and I found people, iOS developers, and I gave them like $25, and they took care of the whole publishing process, and that was way easier for me than dealing with it. You
can cheaply outsource the publishing / deployment to Apple. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you have to give them your code and stuff, which, you know, some people aren't comfortable with, but that was it was such a headache for me that I just did not want to go through it all.
You can revoke all their access once it's published though, right? So they can't siphon off your money that you make.
Yeah. And it worked pretty well for me. And I even did that with like clients and stuff when we did apps for them. So
yeah,
worked pretty well.
Yeah, cool. And for me, that's always been the part of making mobile games that's been the mystery, is how do I actually get this on, you know, for example, the Play Store? What do I need to do? And it's not clear. There's a lot of steps. And just looking at the couple of videos Nathan created on this, there's you need to do this and that and that and this, and then get one of those and fill in these and fill in that and do the other. And it's not difficult. Like, compared to programming, it's easy. It's just going through steps and setting things up. But you just need to know where to look and what the steps are. Just to know that you need to have a license, and it's not that much. It's in the, you know, tens of dollars, $20, $30, $40 kind of thing. Then you can have your game up and running on the Play Store. And Nathan, can you tell us a little bit, or even Tim, tell us a little bit about the approval process for having your game published? I know on Mac or anything iOS related, they're a lot more detailed. They're going to look at, really dig into your game. What happens on the Play Store in terms of approval? What level do you need to have your game at on those two platforms?
My experience is dated by a few years. Nathan, do you have some more recent experience publishing?
In the last year or so, I'd say. So with the Google Play Store, or with both stores, most of the process, like Rick said, it's not too complicated as long as you've got the steps there to follow. Most of it's just filling in information. It's just filling in forms for all the description about your app, and then ticking loads of boxes for, you know, what age rating is it? Is it this kind of content? Does it have this? And it's just a lot of, you know, as long as you know what you're publishing, like you know your game, you just have to sit there and go through filling in a lot of boxes, basically. But as for when you send it off saying, you know, I filled it all in, please can I have my game published now? With Google Play Store, we had no issues really. As for how long it actually takes to get approved, the first time always takes longer, and then whenever you release updates, it's pretty quick. It does say on the website now, you know, due to COVID and everything, it will be probably longer than usual, but, you know, that's just how it is. You can't do much about that. But yeah, they usually get back to you, I think, in about a week or maybe less for the first time, maybe longer at the moment. And they just tell you, you know, after checking your app, whether there were any issues that they found, because there's the automated tests that happen initially when you're publishing, and then they do their own manual checking, or at least I think they do the manual checking on your app, and give feedback. Not like, is the game good? Is the game fun? Not that kind of feedback, but more like, you know, does it follow their guidelines and everything? And then with Apple, they do the same process, but they are a bit more nitpicky, I think. And we had our thing sent back like once or twice for some very, very minor things. And then once we made that minor tweak and sent it back to them, it took days before they then got back and said, yep, cool, you fixed it now. So yeah, you just have to have patience. I think that's the main bit of advice I can give with this. It's just to be patient.
Yeah.
So definitely that's something that I learned, is like, if it's your launch day, don't be like uploading day of or day before, right? Make sure it's like ready to go for your launch day, already uploaded.
But that would make your game just a little bit better, wouldn't it, if you do those last minute tweaks? You can't leave that bug in there, Tim.
No, but that's something I learned on Steam too, is like you submit the build, you get it approved, and then you can update it, and updating is way faster than the first approval,
right?
But a lot of people wait for that first one. They're like, no, I want to submit the final game, but like,
yeah,
that's usually the bad option.
Yeah, there aren't really many benefits to doing that, so
yeah.
So Retsy Studio, Google Play is one payment, $25, Apple license, $100 yearly. I'm guessing that's in US dollars, and I'm guessing that's the same no matter where you are in the world. I'm a bit hesitant to give specific prices because it might be different if you're looking at different currencies or different places in the world, but it seems those things would possibly be consistent worldwide in terms of costs. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's particularly for Google Play, that's not too much. And I'd recommend making a game, Google Play, getting it tested, playing around with it. And then if you're happy with it and you're like, you know what, I think this has got legs, and you don't already have an Apple license, then you can go grab the Apple license at that point. But I think a lot of developers do this. They use the Play Store, Google Play Store, as their testing environment because it's a little bit cheaper to get it on there.
Yeah, cheaper and easier.
One thing I found when I first ever started using the Google Play Store was, I'm sure Apple has this too, but I haven't looked into it much. You can upload a game as like effectively a private beta build, and you can give people links so that your friend can go and download it onto their phone from the store, but it's not like publicly listed or anything. So you can actually have like beta testing, and you can send out email invite waves for like a bunch of people to test your game and stuff. So it has a lot more features than, you know, what I actually show. I show just, you know, you're ready, let's get it uploaded. But there are other, you know, analytics, beta testing, debugging, and all that stuff in the developer console too, to have a go look around if you're interested in that.
Yep. So I've got a question from Rez. Great game, by the way. I played a lot of Rez. I don't know if Rez, you've named yourself after the game, but anyway, cool game. For starting out, is it easier to create clones of more popular games while making them slightly different, or to try completely original ideas for the main purpose of revenue? Tim, what do you reckon about that?
I think when you're starting out, it's a lot easier to clone a game, right? Because game design, I think, is a lot harder than game development. Like, it doesn't seem that way.
That's a controversial statement.
It really depends on the person, right? Like, some people are going to be naturals on either end of the spectrum, but
yeah,
I think it's a lot harder, at least for me, to design a really good game than to build one.
Yeah.
I'm me, everyone else is themselves, so they have different experiences, but
I think it's very, very easy to design an average game, and very, very difficult, you know, for a beginner to program an average game, but it's very, very difficult to design a fantastic game. But if you can program an average game, then it's only a couple of steps to program, you know, a great game. Did that even make sense? I need to draw it out, but anyway.
I think so.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying there. I think I agree. Yeah, I mean, personally, like, I'm more on the developer than the design side, so I always like other people having good ideas and telling me to make them. That's always a lot easier for me. But, you know, when working on my own projects, I've got to, you know, wear all the hats and stuff like that, and, you know, try and come up with something fun, whether that's for, like, game jams or just, yeah, my own projects and stuff. But I would agree, like, yeah, starting out, in my case, I think I did start off by, you know, cloning some games, just not thinking about design and development, because I was just trying to learn development. I just wanted to make something and actually have it work.
Yeah, and I think that's the mistake a lot of people make, is they try both at the same time, right? They're trying to design a new game and learn how to build it at the same time, and that's a lot of stuff to learn at once. Yeah. So if you're learning how to build games, it's a lot better idea, in my opinion, to clone something and copy the design, because then you can just focus on building the development side of it.
And of I'd course, say as well, like,
tweaking it maybe a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sorry. I'd say as well, I'm as a game designer, as I'd call myself a game designer more than a game programmer. The word clone sends shivers up my spine, because there's games. You shouldn't clone games. Clone is the wrong word. Clone means you're copying it exactly. You're ripping it off. You're doing the exact same thing. However, if you take a genre and then you take some of the best games within the genre and you implement things the way they've implemented it, then your game's going to be different. It's not going to be a clone, but it's going to be very similar. You're building upon what they're building upon. So, you know, the word clone for me, instantly I think of Flappy Bird and people making exactly the same game but with maybe slightly different color. And the reason that I'm not a fan of that is because if you put that out there for a little bit of feedback, hey, what do you guys think about this, you're going to get torched by the community because people are a little bit tired, I think, of particularly Flappy Bird clones, but tired of clones. So if you take a game like Flappy Bird and you say, well, how can I do one little piece of innovation on this? Maybe instead of bouncing up and down and going from left to right, maybe we'll have the thing flying from top to bottom and you're bouncing from left to right. Just change one thing that's not going to, it's not going to be a massive change in terms of how you go about creating the product, but it's different enough so people see that you've put in a little bit of effort, particularly if you're looking to put it out there and get feedback and go through that process. If you're only making it for yourself, then make whatever. No one's going to get upset if you make a direct clone or you copy something. But it's not too difficult to make something look and feel different enough from those popular games that you're, you know, you're replicating or you're emulating.
Yeah,
even I agree with that, like, Rick.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Even if you do end up, you know, cloning something, you can always get to the end and be like, okay, I've made my Flappy Bird clone. And then rather than leaving it there and moving on to something else, which you could do, you could then also go back and make your adjustments afterwards, put your own twist on
yeah.
it. And if your goal here is just learning the development, you don't need to put it out there and, you know, get roasted, like you said, for just copying a game, because you know yourself, you've built this thing. And that's what you were trying to do from the start was, can I, you know, figure out how in Unity or Unreal or whatever, like, can I figure out how to go from scratch to having this game working? And if it works, then at least you know you made it work. Even if it is a clone, you've gained some skills in making it. But like you say, it's always good, and it's not too hard to put your own twist on it to make it a bit more interesting.
Yeah, I will say that, like, cloning game features, like Flappy Bird, for example, trying to get the physics exactly like Flappy Bird, trying to figure all that out, I think is a really good learning experience. It was for me. Like, if I don't know how to do something and I try to clone a feature exactly, it helps me really understand the systems better, because I'm like, oh, I added that, but it feels floatier. Oh, I added this, but now it feels too heavy. And like trying to tune in that system can really help to have an end goal that you can kind of like directly see. But then exactly like Nathan said, then like it doesn't mean you have to keep it that way or even launch it at all. You can change it and follow Rick's approach. I think Rick's approach is definitely how you make a better game, is by making it your own. But, you know, trying to make that feature as a learning experience directly, I think could be beneficial.
Yeah, I was never trying to recommend to publish these clones you would make. There was more of just a learning for yourself, or, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think when you're first starting out, I don't know. Again, I'm coming from a game developer point of view. I think you should be flexing a little bit of your game designer muscles when you're developing. So even if it's just taking the main character and doubling it in size, so it looks different and feels different, or making your game a little bit faster, a little bit slower, do something that makes it noticeably different to whatever it is that you're copying or cloning. And that's an important part of just training that design muscle. Cool. Any other questions? There's a million questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can. Can you guys see any that have caught your eye?
I'm dreading to open up the channel again. Every time I open it, I get lost. So
yeah, I know. There's a couple of mirror questions start to pop up as well. I guess folks know that Nathan was the instructor for our Unity multiplayer mirror related course. So we'll get to some of those questions later on. For now, we'll keep it mobile centric. We'll see if we can find some more mobile questions.
Daw asks, how do you make the game limited enough that will still work on any mobile device? I don't think there's a way to make it work on any mobile device, because we're dealing with a decade of devices at this point. But Nathan, do you have any kind of suggestions for kind of general rules of thumb for optimization across the thousands of devices out there that your game might be running on?
Well, if you're on about, like, you know, making sure, because we're on about resolution and stuff earlier, one thing we will be doing is using this thing most people probably haven't used, which is the what's it actually called? I can't remember what it's called. It's basically a mobile simulator. It doesn't simulate, you know, the actual hardware. It doesn't run it as if it had the same CPU and everything, but you actually see the physical shape of the device, and there's a little drop down with I don't know how they chose all the devices they've got there, but they've got a lot of devices. And like you said, when you had done mobile in the past, you had to type in fixed resolutions and probably go around Googling, you know, loads of devices and then getting their resolutions and putting them in and seeing if it works right. But this saves you a lot of time. So testing whether your game works on, like whether your game looks good on lots of devices isn't very hard now, but when it comes to performance, you can never really know, because even if you take two identical phones, but one's been used for a year, it might be a lot slower. And most of the time when you're testing, you might only have your own device to test with. And then as soon as you give it to other people, they might have issues you never thought of, because, you know,
yeah,
profiling is obviously something that's important. And we cover that towards the end of the course, showing how to profile your game, one, in the editor, which is really just testing your PC's performance, but also how to do remote profiling on your device, so you can actually see the performance when it's on your device. But you can see it in the Unity editor, and you can pause on any frame you want, and you can go and look into what is using up all of the processing time on that particular frame in case you have any lag spikes, and you can try and optimize from there.
One thing I'll add to that too is, and this is specific to Google Play, but I'm sure Apple has something similar. One of the things that I noticed in my games that was super important to pay attention to was the crash reports, because Google will tell you, like, hey, your game has crashed this many times, and it'll give you a list of devices that it's not working on. And the other thing is you can actually publish or unpublish your games for specific device types. So for example, if your game is really crashing on one device type, you can remove that so it doesn't crash, but you can also try and fix it. The reason I say crash reports too is because, one, that is like the ultimate worst experience, right? Someone's playing your game, they're having fun, and it just stops working and it closes on their phone. It's extra bad on mobile, I think, because you may never get that person back again, right? But the other thing is, Google actually uses that data on ranking your game in the App Store. Games with high crash rates actually drop in the search results, which is fascinating. So you definitely want to keep your crash reports low. And ultimately, I think it's even worth unpublishing your game for devices if specific devices are causing problems. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's really useful, you know, once your game's published. And you can't, you know, make it crash-proof probably at all, but you can't make it crash-proof, especially before you release it to hundreds or thousands of people, because there's that many phones out there. And, you know, you might be able to test on your own phone, maybe have an old phone lying around, or you might have a phone and a tablet. It depends what you have on hand. And you might have some friends or colleagues to help test on their devices. But at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to cover every device that exists. So it's a case of, you know, optimize where you can. But you don't necessarily know what you need to optimize until you start seeing problems. But,
right,
you know, you're trying to do as much as you can beforehand and then try and catch the loose ends afterwards when, you know, you start getting those reports of it crashing on loads of devices.
Yeah, and if anybody's here that hasn't released a game yet, and you're thinking that you can make the game perfect before you launch, you can't. You can't. You just gotta publish it and then watch the crash reports and fix it as you go. That's kind of how.
Fix it. Yeah, and I think it's,
yeah, you
it's
bring your duct tape with you on the boat.
Exactly, and it's good to test as much as possible at every stage. So I think when you have an idea, let your friends know about the idea and get some feedback on it. When you've got an initial build that's ugly but kind of works a bit, get some folks to have a look at it and get some feedback on it. When you've got a demo, when you've got your alpha, when you're ready to release, like all the way along, don't leave it until the last minute before you show it to people. You've got to get it in the hands of people so you can see whether people like particular things, whether they want more of something, too easy, too hard, what the marketing hooks could be. Because if people are like, wow, I really like that the people explode in a crazy way, like, interesting, I'll put that to the front when I'm making a video for it or talking about it. So getting feedback just the whole way along and not being precious about it, not thinking, but it has to be this way. How dare you, my customer, my player, how dare you tell me to change it? Because the customer's always right, I think, when it comes to this iterative game development philosophy.
Your mic's, it's back now.
Oh,
I thought we lost him.
Oh, no. Well, anyway, I said all that. I said amazing stuff, but you guys didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Chan says, your voice sounds weird on normal. I usually listen to you on 2X, Rick.
I know. Right? I get that a lot.
Talk
fast. Let me see if I can speak a little bit faster so that it's more appropriate to the 2x speed.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I hear you. I think that's why Ben Tristram speaks so fast in real life. You speak to him, he's like, blah, 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 blah. He's very difficult to listen to it 2x when you're watching a course. He's more of a 1.5 guy, but I think I think Nathan as well, we're 2x guys.
Game Dev TV instructors ranked by talk speed.
Yeah, anyway, I was saying just get a lot of feedback, test your game, get feedback all the way along. And don't be worried about people stealing your idea or stealing your game. It takes a lot of time and effort and to make a game. So it's only if your game is out there and it's making $1 million that people are going to be like, ooh, I'm going to steal this. But when it's just an idea, ain't nobody stealing your idea because everyone's got an idea.
Lots of them.
Thazian
asks how to actually get people to play your mobile game. At the top of your source code, if you add in add.players and you pass in the amount of players you want.
Cheeky.
Pretty easy to do.
Cheeky.
marketing. That marketing is a whole topic on itself, right?
It's gigantic.
Like it's an entire industry outside of game dev.
And do you know what percentage of people become game developers so that they can do a whole lot of marketing? I think it's like -100% of people actually aspire to do marketing for their game. We're indie game developers because we want to make games, not market our games. But it's so critical if you want to have commercial success. You've got to really know about the marketing side of things. So the question was, how do you get people to play your game? Was that the question, Tim?
Yeah. Your mobile game specifically.
For me, the first step is to just get your friends playing it. Like, hey, play my game. You owe me one. Like, play it now. Do it. And just make your friends play it. The next thing to look for is groups like this one, Game Dev TV groups. You can go into one of the channels here on Discord and say, hey, I'm just looking for people to do swap playing each other's games. I play your game, you play my game. And you find some people who are like, yeah, let me have a look. And then also if you have a broader group of people that you know, you can start a group, a channel, like a Facebook group or a channel somewhere where you can get people into that group. And each time you update your game, you can say, hey, there's a new one. Can you play it, please? And then you kind of get into marketing. So that first part is just play testing and getting eyeballs and getting feedback. Then you're getting into the marketing side of things. And Tim, I know you've been through this 1,000 times or at least many dozens of times. What would be the next step? Going from just getting your friends and people in the community that you're already part of playing your game to getting strangers and a broader audience checking out your game.
I would say the next step is probably just get other developers to play your game. And I think the way that you do that, the easiest way is to go to Reddit and go on like the Feedback Friday posts or Twitter on Fridays. If you search hashtag Feedback Friday, there's a lot of people that are like willing to just trade feedback with you, especially. And there's a feedback channel here in the server too. You can post your game there, and plenty of other game dev servers have feedback, stuff like that. The easiest, fastest way to get feedback is to give feedback to other developers first. Like, go in and say, hey, here's what I liked about your game, here's not. And then you can just link it. You can literally just ask, like, oh, okay, there's my thoughts, here's my game, I would love some feedback from you. And you know, it's reciprocity. People give back. I think the topic of marketing, like how to actually get thousands of players to play your game and your first 1,000 players, is a way broader one. So I think it's probably easier to just stick to getting feedback initially, because that's what's important, and getting people that you don't know to play the game, because I think that's the extra important part of feedback. That's where the real truth usually comes out.
Yeah. Question from Trollberry, in terms of, this is building upon what we were just talking about, in terms of post-launch updates, many games nowadays suffer from being in constant beta and never ending up being actually finished. When you say just release it and see the crash reports, I feel a bit hesitant to do that, as it's the trend. I think it's the trend because you just have to. You can't develop your game for such a huge amount of time that you find everything. which used to be the way back when I was working in studios, you know, larger studios in the games industry with publishers paying us a ton of money, nothing got released until it was perfect. Because if you're making a game for to be put onto a disc, like a DVD, and then sold in a store to go onto a PlayStation or an Xbox, you just can't update it. Well, you know, you can nowadays because people are connected to the internet and you can do a patch and a download and all that kind of stuff. But back in the day, you couldn't. So we had to test it and test it and test it and test it until it was perfect and there were no bugs. But that's a very costly exercise doing that. And nowadays, there's so many, particularly on mobile, there's so many different environments, there's different phones, there's different setups. You kind of have to do your best to find 90% of the issues. And then from a cost effectiveness point of view, I know it makes the player experience not quite as good, but from a developer point of view, you kind of have no choice. You have to fix it if you find it, and it's really hard to find everything before you launch.
Yeah, well, there's so many, especially with mobile, right? There's thousands of devices, and the technology is improving so rapidly that even if you were the perfect designer and you could develop this stuff in perfection, it takes so long that the amount of time that it took you to take it, some of it can already be obsolete. Like a perfect example is some of my mobile games, they're 4 or 5 years old. And when I was coding them, like, it didn't even occur to me that mobile phones could ever have refresh rates higher than 60, right? Mm-hmm. It just didn't occur to me. And so now I play some of my mobile games on these 120 hertz displays that I have that are just commonplace now, and they run at twice the speed. Because it never even occurred to me that that was a thing on phones. I was like, that's what high-end gaming monitors are, right? Like, not. But the technology is in a drastically different place than it was 5 years ago. So had I spent a bunch of time building that game, like, you know, the technology just improves at such a rate that you're going to have to rebuild stuff. It's not a good strategy, I don't think, especially solo.
Hey, Tim, last time we did our Discord, our new fancy Discord stage setup, I think we tried to get some people on stage. Should we try to do that if anyone's got their hand raised to go through that process of getting a voice question?
Yeah, we got a few people there.
Click on the raisey handy thing. How do we invite someone to the stage? Request to speak. Invite to speak.
I would be careful because we have our stuff is public, so we've got people that are not from the Discord. I would just be extra careful.
Okay, cool. So if you are asking a question or hopping onto stage, please obviously keep it G-rated. Obviously, if you're naughty, then you'll get kicked. I've got a good feeling. So I'm just going to go through the order. I think it puts it in the order that people put their hand up. So Edward, if you're here, we'll invite you to come onto stage and to speak. Did I do that right? Oh, there's Edward on stage. Can we hear you? Hello, what's your question?
Thank you. Really enjoyed the course. I'm new to Unity and I'm loving it. My question is about image resolution. I'm creating a card game with Unity 2D, and the images are blurry. So I was wondering if you guys have any recommendations to try to, for me to get nice, crisp quality images.
I can definitely say that one of the things I always do is I always over, I make the resolution of images probably twice what I will need them as. And what I usually need them as is, if you take the resolution that you're designing for, so if it's a 16:9, 1080p, for example, and it's going to be in the top left corner, it's going to be, you know, a tiny little image, you can kind of do the math on what size that image should actually be based on the resolution and the size and scale. And I would usually double the resolution of what it should be. I always have bigger images because you can always scale them down, but small images you can't scale up. So whenever you're doing any kind of artwork or photoshopping or anything like that, I would always have higher res versus lower res, because all it does is take up memory versus you can actually have to redo them.
Great point. Thanks so much. Really appreciate that.
No problem.
Cool. Thanks for the awesome question and not being a troll. We appreciate that. Vonte, I think we'll invite Vonte. New to Discord. Okay. Inviting to speak. Okay, I clicked the button, but we don't see Avante.
They have to accept it too, so.
I see. That makes sense. You can't just be like, get up on the stage now. Well, I wasn't. What? What was that? How do I uninvite to speak then? dismiss.
There's an X, you can dismiss it, yeah.
Okay, so Vontae, if you want to jump back in the queue, you can. We've got Washinator, invite to speak. Hello, Washinator. I've given you an invite to speak. Welcome.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
You can.
Excellent. Okay, so my question is, of course, about the mobile course, which I have finished and I loved it. Will it be like, will you be making more videos on that, or is there going to be a more advanced course? For example, I missed in-app purchases and multi-touch were the things that felt like this really needed, like those two things, this course. So what are your thoughts on those?
You've already taken the mobile course? Oh, is this from the internal review group?
Yes.
Oh, that makes more sense.
I'm a member.
Okay. Oh, so that was quick.
I was confused for a second there.
Oh, sorry.
We've had it, sorry, we've had I didn't it available know to limited folks. We had an awesome review group helping us out. And then we've also, for just the last little bit of time, we've had some people getting in there and kicking the tires. So there's been some people who have been through it already. The part about multi-touch, Nathan, at the start, did you end up implementing multi-touch, or we decided to keep it simple and go for single touch with the input system?
Yeah, we were originally discussing, you know, what kind of games do we want to make and what kind of mobile specific features. And we came up with a list, and I'm sure multi-touch came up on there somewhere as something we were probably wanting to include, at least at some point in the course. But we never ended up fitting it into the games that we've got right now in the course. And I think you mentioned in-app purchases as well, right? Like microtransactions.
Yes.
And I mean, we definitely discussed the option to add, you know, an extra game if we need more mobile specific features added after. Multi-touch shouldn't be too hard to add from what we've already done, but I understand, like, without us actually having a bit about multi-touch, a lot of people might be wondering, you know, how do you actually do it? So I guess we could discuss trying to make a multi-touch game that has in-app purchases, for example.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe it's not even a game. I think there's a couple of these things. If people are requesting some features, then we'll make a list of it, and it could just be a lecture or two. Part of the reason we didn't have multi-touch is because the code got really messy for what we were trying to do. Or not messy, sorry, but just got a lot more complex and deeper. So it could be just a lecture or two on saying, hey, let's take one of the games that we've got in the course and we'll modify it to be multi-touch, and we'll put that near the back end of the course. So if anyone's made it to the back end of the course, we know they're more advanced and more capable. We're not going to scare away anyone who's a bit more beginnery. And then in-app purchases, that's something I think. So thanks for the question, Washinator. I think both of those things are things that Nathan and I will chat about and see if we can get them into the course as kind of add-ons, as opposed to let's make an entire game that's designed around in-app purchases. I don't know if that's needed for folks.
It's probably not
course.
A good idea. Yeah.
No.
For the multi-touch, that is definitely something I can add in with just a lecture or two, like you say. I think when we were actually designing the games originally, we were trying to force multi-touch in somewhere, but it just didn't fit really with any of the games we made. But like you say, doing a standalone lecture or two just on how to implement it will be quite useful for some people. We wouldn't need an entire extra game just for that, probably.
Yeah. Awesome question. Thank you for that. Thanks for joining us on stage.
Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. And just within the course as well, it was a really difficult balance to keep things friendly for beginners, but also to get as many of those mobile specific features in there. And the games that Nathan takes you through are very, very simple games. They're not games where you're like, damn, I finally learned how to make that particular game. The games are just vehicles to talk about mobile development. So it's all about mobile development. And if you're wanting to get a lot deeper into, but how do I make the games, then yeah, I think our other courses are more suitable for that. This is really just, let's make a game that will work on mobile and talk about mobile and potentially break on mobile and understand how to resolve that. So. That's the philosophy, but yeah, we'll see if you guys have any other requests for things to add into the course after you've gone through it, then we'll certainly have a look at those and see if we can get some extra bits and pieces in there.
Yeah, one thing to add there is well, mobile games as a whole are pretty simple for the most part. At least the successful ones do tend to be pretty basic anyway. Yeah. So we thought, well, that fits pretty well. And it means we can, you know, not dwell too long on the gameplay because, like you say, there's already the 2D, 3D, and all the other courses more focused on the gameplay itself. And whilst we do, you know, show from scratch to making the gameplay, it's not the most advanced stuff in the world. It's like you'd probably expect from mobile games. It means we can get to the mobile specific stuff quicker and have more time focused on that.
Exactly. Cool. Let's take another question in voice. We've got Mighty Enigma. I'm going to invite you to stage. This invite to stage stuff works well. It's good work, Discord.
It does.
Good work. Mighty Enigma, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. So my question is, because I've run into a problem every time I've made a game where I want to make it multiplayer, and I think, well, we've got lots of mobile devices lying around. The whole family can pick it up and play. And so I make it multiplayer and cross-platform. So those of us on the PCs can play with those on the mobile devices, and that works just fine on the local area network. But then I think, well, if I want to sell this game, then it needs to work online. And so I realize I need to use online services. And that's where I hit the wall, and I've got a big hurdle to get over because they can be expensive, and it's hard to figure out how do you match people up with each other so they can find each other's game sessions and all those things. And there's so many ways to go about it, and it's very confusing when I get to that point.
Yes.
So what advice can you give on how to effectively strategize for cross-platform online multiplayer with mobile? Well,
like you say, it is confusing. I'm not going to try and deny that. And most people go to third-party services, and that's what I've done in the past. And I can only speak for Azure PlayFab. That's quite a popular one, I think. And they have a lot of services to do with player accounts, achievements, chat, and multiplayer as well. And whilst I can't just, you know, speak right now and magically have it all work. What can I do for advice here?
Is this something we cover in the multiplayer course?
No, we decided, honestly, it's like a completely separate topic, really. Because we were focusing more on developing a multiplayer game.
Right.
When you get to deployment and needing actual servers and matchmaking and third-party services, it gets very advanced. And
And suddenly.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I've made this game. Yay, I'm such a good game developer. And then I want to take it into online, and suddenly I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, with PC stuff in the past, I've used Steamworks as... I know that's limiting to Steam and everything like that. But at least it means you can use their like groups and things and invite your friends through Steam, and you don't need to port forward or, you know.
Right, because they have the stun and turn technique they have.
Like you say, you want to connect cross-platform over the internet or over the world, whatever. It is advanced. And I guess we have discussed after we finished the multiplayer course that, you know, we know people will want to do that kind of stuff. We don't know if it makes sense to add it on after the multiplayer course, if it's its own thing, because it's that advanced. And, you know, a lot of people here just want to make games, and then there's a smaller subset of that who want to publish games and actually go the extra step to, you know, pick a third-party service and go through all the extra steps afterwards to do all that.
And I think that's the secret is to find the third-party service. So find one that people say, I've used this one, it's pretty good, and then just launch into figuring out how it works and figuring out how to connect it all up. And often the challenge is, should I use A or B or C or D? But normally if you go hang out in places where people have used these things a lot, and in general our community is a bit more beginner and intermediate and less advanced. So there's less folks running around saying, oh, I use this particular third-party product for my online mobile multiplayer MMO RPG. We don't have so many of those folks running around. And for us, we're not making those sorts of products ourselves. And but if you find what's the third party that I should use, what's the system, what's the service I should hang it all on, and then you can just launch into finding how to use that thing and experimenting and going through that journey. So I know it's not a great answer from the point of view of here is the exact solution, but the solution is research which of those services you think is going to be best for your particular game, your particular approach, and then just do your best to go about learning how to implement.
All right.
Try and find
I was looking into using Steam, but they didn't seem to have the ability to let me put an Android build on the Steam store.
Yeah, I don't think you can use the Steamwork stuff for cross-platform mobile. I mean, maybe you can. I don't think you can, but it's possible, I guess.
All right.
But yeah, try and find a community of people that have done it before. That's probably the best advice. And also, if the actual service or platform themselves have good documentation, that's your best bet. Just keep in mind that, you know, in the games that are already established like this, they'll likely have entire teams or, you know, dedicated people just doing the online service part of the game. It's its own big thing separate to the development, just like marketing. It's a separate thing, really.
It feels like the marketing one.
It's also, so, I think there's not many more difficult games to try to have commercial success with than a mobile multiplayer game, particularly a game that requires matchmaking or requires you to have an audience already. Because if someone comes along and says, I want to play this game and there's no one to play with, then the game doesn't get any momentum. So you kind of need to throw lots of people at it in order to get that community and that environment. So if you're doing it just because you want to make a game for your family to play, that's a little bit of a different conversation. You know, family and friends, this would be kind of fun. You know, this would be neat. But if you're looking to make something that's a commercial success as a mobile multiplayer game, then we're kind of evolving a little bit from the solo indie developer. You know, what's possible or what's realistic, particularly if you haven't done this before. And it's starting to become a much bigger mountain to climb where you'll need, a bigger budget, you'll need more people, etc. So just understand why you're going into it and understand that some things are trickier than, you know, taking a course or two and then jumping in and doing it. Some things are bigger beasts to wrestle with, I think.
Thank you for fielding my question.
No worries. No, thank you for joining us here on stage. I've got a question in the Q&A I wanted to respond to. Tim, this might be a good one for you. It's from Chan. How do you guys, so it's to you and I, Tim and Rick, how do you guys respond to toxic or mean feedback, of which we've both had plenty? What do you reckon, Tim?
Well, I just got done with a Kickstarter for one of my games, and it was a card game, and I entered that card game world, and my game got destroyed by so many people, Facebook groups and YouTube videos that had thousands of views. Yeah, in public. What was that?
You cut out just briefly for a second there.
Oh, I was just saying it's not easy at all to kind of take that, especially when it happens in public. Like if somebody says something on a forum, it hurts. If somebody says something in a YouTube comment, it hurts. But if somebody says something on like a YouTube video that gets more views than your YouTube videos, it's like it's extra hurts. But you know, it's not, there's a great quote that I'm not going to try and recreate, but the quote is basically like, it's not the critic that matters. It's the people in the trenches doing the thing, you know, that are making progress. And if you let those things stop you, what, some random person on the internet is going to have that much power over your entire life? They're going to type some stuff on a keyboard and then you're going to stop doing something you love because somebody moved their fingers in a certain way across the planet? Like, you can't. You got to deal with it like anything else. I personally have had to remove myself from a lot of places on the internet. So like my YouTube channel, for example, I don't really read the comments. I have DMs and stuff turned off most places. I have that kind of thing, and I don't go searching for things like that just because they affect me more, and I just try to focus on doing the work. Now, when you're getting feedback, right, obviously you need that, but I find it's a lot easier to feel those negative things when you prep for it. So, like, I go into feedback phases for my games, and I'm like, okay, now I'm in a feedback phase, so for the next month, I'm going to get feedback from a bunch of people, and I prep for, like, the worst case, and then usually what I get back isn't the worst case, so it's not that hard to deal with. Whereas, like, if I'm being bombarded from all these different places with a bunch of negative stuff, it can have an effect on my mental health, so I stray away from that when I can. So social media stuff, mostly. Try and stay away from that stuff. But
yeah, I tend to,
it's rough.
I tend to group or put things into buckets. And there's a couple of buckets that I pay attention to when people are giving negative or bad feedback. The first bucket that I'm always looking for is there some truth in what someone's saying? And are they just delivering it in a clumsy way? Like, is this person, do they have good intention? And I've had that a lot with my everything over the years. But for example, in courses, when I was not as proficient in Unity and C#, and I'd say something that was not quite exactly right, and I'd get people who had more experience than me out in the community, and they're like, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, this is terrible, you're awful, this is wrong, blah blah blah. And you know, there's a hurt to it, but because there's a truth to it, and if there's a truth to it, then what you need to do is take action to improve or resolve what that person is saying. If you only ever get people saying, yeah, this is good, you know, it's okay, fine, then you don't know where to improve, you don't know where to focus on. So for me, that was like, cool, I need to make sure that I'm not saying an incorrect terminology. Even if the result is the same, I need to make sure that I'm buttoned up with my terminology. So I spent a lot of time and effort making sure that I got my terminology right. So that's positive. You can use that even if it stings a little bit. And then there's other sorts of feedback that I put into the bucket of, this person is looking for attention in their life. This person has some stuff going on in their day to day, and by them trying to hurt me or say something, they're trying to get a response. They're trying to make their own lives interesting. They're trying to fix something that's going on with them. So someone might be like, you know, you suck, I hate you. There's not a lot you can take out of that to build upon. And all you can do is put it in the bucket of, I feel sorry for that person. There's clearly some stuff going on with their life. And so when you guys are out there releasing your games, you'll get some people like, oh, the character controls are garbage, I can't move, this is dumb, it's so slow and boring. There's going to be some truth in that. You need to listen to that and be like, what's actually going on here? How do I improve it? And there's other people who are going to be like, you know, you should never make games because, you know, you're ugly, whatever. Then those are the ones you're like, cool, you know, I'm just going to ignore that person, put them in the bucket of they've got some stuff going on in their lives. So that for me is how you handle that kind of negative press or negative feedback. And you will absolutely, absolutely get people saying nasty things about your game or anything you put online. But in my experience, it's around about 1 in 20 people are negative. The other 19 are positive. So you've got to keep it in that context as well.
It's definitely a skill you have to learn as a creative professional, especially as a creative entrepreneur. And I think it's easy to say, and I just want to, like, you know, for everybody listening, it's easy to say, oh, well, you know, don't listen to them. Like, just, it's fine. Don't listen to them, guys. It's fine. Just don't listen to them. And that's a lot easier said than done sometimes. I know for myself, I'm super obsessive. So when I start getting these negative comments, it's very easy for me to, like, get lost in them and then obsess with them. And then my brain obsesses about how horrible I am as a person because these people on the internet hate me. And then I can go down a rabbit hole like that. So having known myself, and see myself do that plenty of times. The other part that I would add to this is disconnection, right? So having some healthy disconnection and pulling it away. I remember launching a game is super stressful. So one of the things I've started doing when I launch, and I even did it with, like, Kickstarter stuff, but I make myself go somewhere like the beach because I live in Florida, or pull out of the internet into a book or something just pull out of it for a whole day or for a time period. And then usually when I come back to it, I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, I get perspective, right? Like when I'm in the vast of the ocean looking out into a sunset and I've got fish swimming around me and I see all these life forms, I realize like, oh, some dude typing on a keyboard isn't actually that big of a deal. Whereas it really seemed like it was 4 hours ago, you know?
Yeah. So what if we invite another speaker or two? We'll wrap up pretty soon. We'll invite another speaker or two. We've got Key, K-E-Y. Key, I'm going to invite you to speak on the stage. If you want to accept that, come join us and fire off your question.
Okay. This one's for Dapper Dino. I've been following your Mirror course on Udemy as well as YouTube. And I've run into a few bumps here and there, but to keep it simple, using Mirror, given a very basic health script, how do you go about gathering these health components from other player prefabs to be used in, say, a local UI? Think WoW party systems.
So you mean like, yeah, just having like a screen that maybe shows the current health of like all the players in the game or something?
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously you need that to be somewhat dynamic in case people, you know, join and leave mid-game or something. And I find most things in multiplayer tend to be solved by events. So, you know, just like my really simple solution would be to have the UI listening for an event when a, let's say, a player respawned or whenever like a player's, you know, health component is instantiated. So that would be, you know, your health component's on the player object. So whenever a player respawned, you know, some kind of event is triggered, and then if the UI listens for that event, and what you do is where you actually invoke the event on the player, you would pass through, let's say, the health component, or you just pass through the player's game object, and then the UI can like grab the health component off that, and then presumably in the health component you've probably got another event for whenever the health changes and you update that UI. It's just usually a long chain of events gets things sorted. Just make sure you unsubscribe when things get destroyed and clean up so you don't get, you know.
I see. I may have been overcomplicating this for myself. So something like on public override on server start, invoke, and then pass in the health component. Have the UI component listen for that.
Yep.
And then just set it to an image for the UI.
Yeah, you'll just need to keep in mind about like race conditions, in case, let's say, the event for a player spawning might get invoked before the UI starts listening, so you might miss a player or two or something. It all depends. You've got to make sure you've got that right. Or you could, when the UI spawns, actually go and grab all the current health components that are already in the scene, grab those, and then listen for any new ones that get added. You know, it depends kind of what methods you put these things in, like where you subscribe, where you unsubscribe. And I guess like a little bit of testing should make it apparent.
I think that's where my issue lies is, say you join afterwards, you're not the first person in there. How do you proactively go about being, there are this many people, I need to grab this many components? Because that way you can't listen for an event you're joining, you would have to search for them yourself.
Well, you could subscribe in, let's say, the awake methods in the UI, so that would like start listening, and then all the network server spawns, or like the network spawn methods would then trigger after that. Even if it's in like the same frame or the frame after, it would still be after. Yeah, it's hard to like, you know, fully think out my idea right now without having hands on or anything, but yeah, just keep an eye on the call order and like just make sure the right thing happens before the other things. And like I said, if you do have the issue of you're only getting the new players and not the ones who are already in there, then you could, even if you do an expensive call, like, you know, the game mode find, you know, or find all health components method, even though it's expensive, if you do it just once on join, it's not an issue, really. To like go grab all the ones that are already there.
But... Cool. Has that got you a little bit of some extra ideas there?
A few things to think about, yeah.
Awesome, cool. And then, yeah, by all means, pop your code into one of the channels on here, and see if there's some other folks that can give you some feedback on that as well. Obviously, it's easier for people to comment on what you're already doing than it is to come up with something from scratch. So maybe if you have a shot at it, then we can get some more feedback through the channel here.
I'll have to work on it because I took a break to actually just study a few things and think about it. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure what I've wrote previously looks like a dinosaur.
Okay, yeah, maybe once you iterate on it, give it another shot. So, yeah, I didn't mean here as in the Q&A chat for today's conversation. I just meant somewhere on Discord in one of our groups, maybe in the advanced program or in the Unity channel, pop in there and you can bounce it around a bit further and get some more support on it. So good luck with that that UI and players and showing all the health challenge that you're working on.
Yep, good luck.
Thank you.
Awesome.
See ya.
Thanks, man. Thanks for joining us. Let's take another. That went well. I see Rez has had Rez's hand up for a long time. So, Rez, let's invite you to speak and ask a question.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, I had a question about the process after, once you have your game completed. One of my concerns is the saturation or oversaturation of mobile games. And I was wondering, based on how to get your game, I guess, seen by an audience, what would be one of the best, most, I guess, profitable options as far as like maybe ClickFunnels, doing advertisements on Facebook or any other social media platform?
So if I can give a first answer, and then I think Tim's going to be able to give much better answers on top of that. My first answer, and I've done this from experience, is don't pay for advertising until you know that people already really like your product. Like, just don't pay for it, or don't use it as a way to, you know, oh, I'll just put in $300 and see what happens, because those $300 will just go straight down the toilet. Put it out on, as Tim was saying before, on Reddit or on Facebook or within the community here. And if people are looking at it and saying, you know, looking at a video of it, put videos out there. If people are like, damn, that looks cool, I want to play it, or wow, what's going on here, or that looks great, then you can progress to the next stage of more formal marketing. But if you're putting something out there, like a 10 or 20 or 30 second snippet of it, and there's not a great response, then you need to work on getting better communication or getting a better wow factor to what it is that you're doing, or else you're just going to be chucking away your money. So, Tim, how would you build on that, Tim?
I would have another question in return. So you're just trying to get players, or you want to actually make a profit with players? Like, you actually want to monetize and build a business on top of it?
I would say monetize.
Okay, and do you have monetization built into a game already and it's making money?
No, not yet.
Okay, so you're just thinking ahead of like how to do it.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so similar to what Rick said, I think there's a difference between marketing and advertising, right? So marketing is getting targeted people to see your stuff. Advertising is paying for those targeted people. Advertising is a really quick way to get yourself in a lot of financial trouble. The only way I would ever do advertising specifically is if you have working monetization and you understand some of your key metrics. So if you understand, for example, that you make $1 per 1,000 users, or per 1,000 monthly active users or whatever, like if you have those metrics and you understand that data, then I would go into advertising, because then you can say, hey, I pay $1 to acquire a user, and on average that gets me $1.50 or whatever, right? You got to know the numbers. As far as marketing, that's a really big topic, but I would start with what Rick said about finding people and gauging their reactions to the game. You want people to really kind of be interested in it and share it. I think in a social kind of atmosphere that we're in now, word of mouth is a really big part of kind of game spreading, and having something that's very visually interesting that spreads is a good way to do that. Creating animated GIFs and posting them in various communities is a good way to kind of gauge the interest level of your game. It's not necessarily the best way to acquire players, but it's a good way to gauge the interest in your game on whether or not it's worth pushing it out as it is, or even specifically your marketing materials are important, right? So like if you post three GIFs and one of them does much better, then you can say, hey, this is a GIF that people like and they enjoy, and that's the one you can spend a lot of work promoting, put it on Twitter and all these different places. Yeah, is there a specific question you wanted to ask, or is it just kind of generally how to get players?
Yeah, it was generally that, and this was extremely helpful as to not, I guess, spend so much money on it, or how to get that visibility. Is there, a guideline as to when maybe using marketing is a viable option?
I think marketing should be a feature of your game if you're planning on releasing it commercially, which not everybody is, right? Like, we have plenty of people in this community that they just want to build games as a hobby. But if you're planning on releasing it commercially, I think you need to be thinking about that all the way. Like, so much so to the fact that with my games, the marketing of it comes up in the actual design of the game. The games I design now are designed to be visually interesting. Like, I'm thinking of it that far ahead of time. And I think you have to, because the way that the majority of people see your game these days are social media, YouTube, streamers, sharing, social sharing, right? GIFs, Reddit, these kind of places. And you have to kind of prepare for that. I'll give you two really easy 80-20 ways to get a lot of people to play your game. The first is the super simple one. If you can create a GIF, you can go to screen2gif.com. You can create and download their application. It's free. You can make a GIF of that. And if you go to reddit.com/r/gaming and you post in there, you want to get your post history up. You don't just want to immediately create an account and start posting your game stuff. You want to hang out there. But that, if you can get to the top of R Gaming, when I got my post, I got like 100,000 people that upvoted it. That led to 2,000 email subscribers, that led to hundreds of thousands of people seeing my game, and that was something that took an afternoon. So that's a really cool, fast way. It does take some work to understand the systems, but generally it doesn't take that long. The other part of it is contacting YouTubers is easier than you think. You can go to YouTube, you can search, you find 3 to 5 games that are similar to yours. Let's say you're making a platformer, right? Then Super Meat Boy might be similar to yours. And you can search things like Super Meat Boy Let's Play, Super Meat Boy Playthrough on YouTube. You can create a spreadsheet of all the channels that come up that are covering similar games. And then on YouTube itself, you can go to the About tab, and almost all YouTubers have their email listed right there. And you can just copy that and paste it into a spreadsheet. And then when you've got 100 or 200 of those, you can go through and email a download key to those people. And that's how to find targeted YouTubers that have played similar games that would probably be interested in yours. So those two things are like the 80-20 strategies. There's a lot more to it, but maybe those can help you out.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And thank you all for taking the time and doing this. I really appreciate it. Very valuable information. Thanks again.
Thanks for your question.
No worries. Thanks for joining us up on stage. We appreciate it. Okie dokie. So I think we've reached the end of our time. Sorry for all the questions we didn't get to, but if we could just take some concluding comments from you two guys, just anything specifically to do with mobile or just game development in general, anything that you wanted to leave as words of wisdom. So Nathan, any words of wisdom, specifically mobile related wisdom for our folks in the community to consider?
I'd say if this is your first time making mobile, or even it doesn't have to be your first time, just don't design it initially with, you know, selling it to thousands of people at the end, because, I mean, especially if you're learning, you just want to have fun and make the game fun. Of course, if you've made mobile games before and this is the one you're making to sell, then it's a bit different. But I think for most people in most scenarios, you shouldn't think about how it's going to sell, you know, a year in the future when it's finished, or however many months, you know. Just make the game fun. And generally, if you make the game fun, then it's probably going to end up selling better anyway. So yeah.
I 1000% agree with that. I should make a caveat that I made dozens of games. Like, I think I'm at like 37 or some crazy number. And I've made a couple commercial games, and I've done this for years. So I think when you're starting out, you shouldn't start with, you know, all this crazy stuff. You should focus on publishing your first game first. I think that's a good spot, just getting it out there no matter what. Persevering, doing all the motivation stuff, sticking through all the negative comments, all that stuff, and just getting it out there. I think that is the most important thing you could do if you want to do this longer term, is publishing a game. So that's what I would stick to.
Fantastic. Yeah. Awesome. And just have fun while you're doing it. Make sure you're out there having fun while you're working on games. Games are supposed to be fun. They're not supposed to be a grind. So have a good time. Cool. Nathan, Tim, thanks for joining us today. And for everyone in our audience, thanks you guys for coming along. Thanks for all the questions. And thanks for being a wonderful part of our community. Just a reminder, maybe we can pop the link in the Q&A one more time, that the Unity mobile course is out and about at the moment. You can pick up this fancy deal that Lucy has cooked up for us. I think for the next few days that's available, which is pretty cool on the Game Dev TV site. And for just a reminder, we're definitely working on Unreal content. So I know we do a lot of here's a new Unity thing, but there's Unreal content coming as well. So thanks everyone for joining us today.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Just a quick reminder, too, that course is like 90% off. You can get it for $10, and that coupon code does expire. So make sure you click it while you can and get in on this.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you, guys, and thank you to everyone, and we'll see you all again, hopefully again, next week.
Bye, buddy.
See ya.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. You can find all courses at gamedev.tv or in the show notes at a discounted price. Get started with your game development journey today.